I'm Sonia Sikanto, and this is my podcast, Unseen: Legacies of Childhood. My next and last guest of this series is the brilliant Sandra Stein. Funnily enough, my husband came across one of her videos on Instagram, and when I saw it, I knew right away she would be the perfect guest for this series. She's an MBACP registered, humanistic gestalt integrative therapist, group facilitator and author. She also has extensive experience of working with addiction and eating disorders at the Priory Hospital in London and specialised in trauma through the Oxford University Master Series. I think it's safe to say we are in very good hands. Here she is. Hello, Sandra. Welcome to Unseen, Legacies of Childhood, the podcast. Lovely to have you here. How are you?
Thank you, Sonia. It's a pleasure to talk to you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm okay. I'm fine. Even better now.
It's lovely to see you. Can you, for our listeners, could you just explain a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Right. I'm a counsellor therapist and I'm a writer. I work with individuals, with adults mainly, and I facilitate groups. And on my free time, I do my own researches on areas that interest me, and I write about them.
Mm. And what are your areas of interest?
Mostly trauma, and included in that vast umbrella, neglect, and how the not so good and not so nurturing experiences we went through when we were children, when we were teenagers, how they manifest now as an adult, and how we walking through life, letting those ghosts and those hurts to navigate life through us and for us.
I think many people will be able to resonate with that. We're all kind of, quite a lot of people have got quite a lot of ghosts in the background that you would never know. How did you come to this path?
I guess I used my own lived experience. I am originally from Brazil, from the furthest corner of the north, in Amazon. Like, to just give you a little bit of my background. So my father left when I was 2 years old, and I grew up in an environment that was very unsafe, and I experienced a lot of neglect, and I was fostered by different people. So I lived in different houses because my mom didn't have the psychological, emotional or financial structure to look after me. And in that sort of journey, I faced a lot of abuse, physical, emotional, and also I gained a lot of mechanisms. I learned about a lot of things very early on. So I matured really fast. And then when I became a young adult, I decided that I needed to find a place away from all of that, that I could grow in all parts of my life. So then I came to UK 19 years ago with no English or whatsoever, and climbed up the ladder of the language and social in so many ways, to then find myself in my own therapy journey, and then through my own healing and inspired from my healing, I wanted to help people to heal their wounds also, or to self-regulate, or to feel they have choices.
That is such a beautiful thing to do. You know, how what was your journey of healing? How did you start that journey?
Well, I found that after a while living in UK, I feel like I've been always lost. I never really felt grounded. I never felt peaceful within my skin. My mind always raced, my thoughts always raced. I wasn't emotionally regulated at all. And I got to a point where I hit the, what they, you know, it's a, widely known life crisis.
Yeah.
And then by then I was married already.
Oh.
And
so was this in what kind of age bracket would that be?
I was 32.
Wow.
So I started to have suicidal ideation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if I wanted to be married.
Yep.
I didn't know if I wanted to stay here or go back home.
Mm.
I just had this avalanche of insecurity, doubt, lack of motivation, and I didn't know where I wanted to be, where I wanted to go, what I wanted to be. So then a friend of mine who was a psychotherapist approached me and said, you know, I think you're ready to do some self-search. And the interesting thing is I didn't believe much in therapy. It was a thing that wasn't for me. I loved reading self-help books. I loved watching thought-provoking videos.
Yeah.
But the one-on-one therapy wasn't really something that I focused on.
Mm. And would you say in your family was therapy something that everyone did? Or, I mean, I know my family, therapy is not something that we do.
No, absolutely not. Not even to this day.
Really?
No, absolutely not. And I suppose back in my country, I think therapy is more of a luxury.
Okay.
And it's more of for one, I mean, everybody should have it.
Of course, yeah.
Everybody should have access to it, starting from very early age.
Yeah.
But it's because of the cost of it and because of the stigma that is attached to it, especially in Brazil, people don't really look for it, for that sort of support, which is a shame.
That is a shame, isn't it? I mean, there is a stigma in quite a lot of families. I mean, certainly I'm not sure about all Asian communities, but certainly my community, it was never really well thought of to be having therapy. There must be something really wrong with you if you're going to have therapy. You know, like, oh my God, your mind must have been blown if you're having to, you know, go to therapy. You're very much encouraged to work things out for yourself. You know, you have to be strong. You're encouraged to be from a young age, you are encouraged to be strong and sort yourself out and manage yourself.
Mm.
You know, it's not really the done thing to go and have therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. And it's still, unfortunately, that sort of thought that's carried. I think there's a lot of praise on the resilience, which then can work in a way to isolate people not to look for support and for help.
Yeah.
I believe strongly in collective healing, and as well as independent healing, you know, because when you are in therapy and you go and you talk to a professional and you are encouraged to look into those areas that you haven't looked yet, you're encouraged to think about different views and through different lenses that you haven't looked at. And then when you go back home and you spend that week or whatever it is, the gap between one session and another, with yourself. So it is very much a long journey. But if you're lucky to be surrounded with an environment where you get that support and that encouragement, the community, which can be called family, can be called friends, it can be called any other group that you're part of, all the better, really.
That's so true, isn't it? Because I would imagine, I mean, if you think about clients that come to you, they wouldn't come to you thinking that their childhood is responsible for how they're feeling now. They would assume that this is, I'm feeling this, I don't know why. You know, please help me, I don't know why I'm this way, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, I mean, my main area is trauma.
Mm.
And trauma covers everything, because everything goes back to a point of your past.
Right.
It can be childhood. It can be infancy. It can be your teenage years. It can be your young adulthood. It can be yesterday.
Wow.
Right. And most of my clients, when they come in, they don't come in saying, I need to work on my trauma. Mm-hmm. I have some that come, they know, they're more experienced in self-awareness. Mm-hmm. But most people that haven't had the exposure to therapy, they come and ask help to improve certain areas of their lives, which unmistakably always, it always began at some point in the past.
So it's amazing, isn't it? How we just, we don't put the two together sometimes, you know? Yeah. We just don't always put the two together. We feel that it's something that we've grown into. This mindset is something we've grown into, or this feeling is something that's just come on. And I remember reading a book, I think it was Donna Jackson Nakazawa, called Childhood Disrupted. And I remember her saying that the childhood, the adversity that you experience in childhood, usually the impacts of that, the trauma will come out in your 30s, 40s and 50s. It doesn't always come out when you're a teenager or when you're 21 or something. Sometimes it waits because you're busy achieving or trying to get over what you're trying to get over your past and trying to make something for yourself or just trying to get by. And you're busy in the present day. And sometimes all that hamster on a wheel, just performing, and doing. Sometimes you hit a block in your 30s, 40s, and 50s where suddenly it manifests into health and mental health, physical and mental health things. You know, you might end up with autoimmune problems. You might end up with depression or anxiety, and it does come. It feels like it comes from nowhere.
Yeah. No, it does. It does come. And as we were talking earlier about the depending on which society you grew up, but some society, they encourage you to be this self-independence and just push it through. And I myself developed that mechanism also. Don't look into it too much. Don't think about it too much. Just get through. But that comes also with the self-criticism of, I mustn't be weak. Why am I crying because of this? Why am I feeling so much about this? And then you push through and you go from one decade to the next decade.
Yeah.
But then as the book, The Body Keeps Score from...
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that book is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was part of a conference last year in Oxford. It was 5 days just about trauma from all these head thinkers about trauma. And Basil van der Kolk.
Yes.
Yes. And he's one of the main names in trauma. And it's pretty much what, like he says, you know, the body keeps score. And I've got many clients that come in to... they want to deal with, let's say, the anxiety, but then they disclose that they have some sort of self autoimmunity disease, you know, like Crohn's disease or allergy and this and that. Fast forward, I normally take my clients to how were they before they knew they were sick. And there is always something very important that happened in that life.
Really?
Then triggered something.
Wow.
But unfortunately, you know, when it gets to the point where the illness or the health condition, it's pretty much on the surface, it's you're left with regulation. And it's quite hard to heal completely. And that's the main point. We push through. We think we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
But your body is just storing in it. And eventually you will come out and come out.
And when you're talking to clients about these things, are there any issues that you can pinpoint? It's these are the main things that you experience generally that come out. Like, for instance, is it the root cause of it, is it generally something like self-esteem or is it something else? I mean, are there like a couple of just a small brackets of words that you can bring out that are usually the root cause of these things?
I can bring two things that comes to mind. I trust very much in my intuition when I'm asked questions, because it's normally the truthful self of me speaking. One of them, it's normally about a growing up environment.
The environment, yes.
The house environment. Mm-hmm. Was there too much fighting? Was there too much physical violence? And I'm not here to blame the parents.
No, of course, no.
Because it's not about the parents. It's about how you, me, as a child, perceived and felt and experienced the environment. So bringing to my situation, I felt very unsafe. Mm. And I felt on the edge. And I felt I couldn't really let myself to relax, because I would have to move at any point.
Right.
Bless my mom, she had no idea that would be the kind of impact on me.
Yes.
She was just doing what she had to do to survive. Mm-hmm. She was worried about the main thing, which was food and shelter.
Yes.
So that is one thing, the environment, if it's nurturing, if it's safe, if it's consistent enough. And the other thing is experience at school. In your teenage years.
So the home environment in the school, that makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly enough, as I said at the beginning, there's a lot of subjects that interest me a lot. And I've been researching on teenage years and how your environment at school and your experience at school, primary, secondary, college, university, What it did inside your system, how it helped you to shape you as a person.
Right.
Your identity. And I found very, very little. So then I went on to do my own data gathering from my own clients. And yeah, low self-esteem, which it's detrimental to forging relationships and maintaining relationships. Perfectionism.
Hmm. Yep.
Body dysmorphia. And all of that can lead to much more serious conditions like addiction, food, binging, and so on and so forth. Eating disorder, I mean, to be more scientific about it.
That is so interesting. I mean, I can speak from my own experience here, where I was heavily bullied at primary school. In Mauritius, I wasn't born in Mauritius, but we moved to Mauritius when I was five. And between the age of 5 and 7, I was heavily bullied and I was moved to schools 3 times. And I can tell you now, that started with my tummy pain. You know, when children say that they've got tummy ache, they don't want to go to school. Mm. And that's what I used to have. Like, I had tummy ache. I don't want to go to school. And that continued into my adulthood. You know, something about tummy, something about overeating, undereating, overeating, undereating. Something about my gut and the childhood definitely is absolutely related. And the whole people pleasing, because you have to keep starting again. Every time you move schools, you have to start again. And you don't know how you're going to make friends. And so you just lie. So you just say, yes, I like what you like too. And then you say something to someone else, the complete opposite. And then they'll talk together and they'll say, oh, Sonia said no to me, but she said yes to you. She's not reliable, you know. And it's because you just want to fit in. And that continues, doesn't it? So I found, for me, growing up into teenage years, I was so busy wanting to be liked. Mm. I wouldn't choose always the right people to hang about with, or the right boyfriend, or the right, you know, you just want to be seen to be doing the same as everyone else. You want to wear the same clothes. You want to look the same, and you want to have the same personality, and you want to be funny. And like you say, there's for teenagers particularly, there's a pressure to look a certain way, or speak a certain way, or dress a certain way. And I think those pressures on teenagers, and of course with social media now, we have, you know, you have a different pressure, don't you, where they're watching what other people are doing and want to be the same or better. I think you're right. Teenage years are very, very difficult.
Right. Yes. And I hear that a lot in my consulting room. I hear that a lot. There's a massive theme of people looking for support with their self-esteem, with their confidence in finding a partner, staying in a marriage or staying in a relationship, or how they feel they don't feel confident making friends and staying friendship, and the people pleasing. The codependency that becomes, it's like codependency is addiction to people's validation.
Right.
Pretty much. But there's another undertone that you can only be worked in trauma therapy with all of that, is that besides the fact that we do what we need, what we feel we need to do to fit in, so we neglect ourselves, we neglect our needs and our wants to put everybody else's wants and needs and desires first, there is something else to do with the repetition, the unconscious repetition of how was your experience as an adult, I'm talking about fast forward, as how you felt about yourself growing up or doing at any stage of your life. So to give an example, if as a teenager, if you felt that you were not popular and amongst peers, or you're not popular around the sex that you wanted to get with, and you felt rejected, therefore not pretty enough, not good enough, less than, and so on and so forth. If that becomes part of your inner world, as an adult, you will hook on with people or click with people that makes you feel the same way. So in trauma language, we call it trauma bonding.
Wow. You'd think you'd go for the opposite, didn't you?
Right. Some people, I mean, rarely it happens. Yeah. I mean, bringing myself into, you know, being very vulnerable and truthful about my own story, I did the opposite when I picked my husband. However, I need to work on myself a lot.
Right.
A lot. Because my ghosts were about, come on, find somebody that makes you feel horrible, neglected, unimportant. Come on, girl. That's sexy. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, and it must really be deep in your subconscious, right? Because it's not something you consciously think about. So I know, you know, I was with my ex-husband for 17 years, I think, and he had his own traumas. You know, he had been bullied heavily and he became a bully. He's not a bully now. He's really lovely. But the 17 years that we met at 17, from 17 to 30, we were both playing out our traumas. So I was a people pleaser and he had been bullied and became a bully. And so this was like the most toxic relationship because I just felt that, well, this is all I deserve. And that surely I'm not enough. I'm not enough for anyone else.
Yes.
You know, this is as much as I deserve. And I'm sure it'll get better soon. I think it'll get better. If I give that person enough love, because they're fragile, so if I give them enough love, then surely they will be well and then they can help me. But it actually doesn't work like that, you know.
No. And it sounds... I mean, I don't want to therapize you at all, but just linking what you said,
of course,
is there's always that projection that if you're so fragile and vulnerable and you're so confused, if I give you enough love and look after you and help you,
absolutely,
you will find a way. But actually, we should say that to ourselves.
Yes.
Because you are the one vulnerable.
That's
you
right.
are the one fragile, right? And I was, thanks heaven, I was lucky enough to find my husband and be patient, that was patient with me to work through my hungry ghosts. And it's those things, right, that you can find people that will make you will not make you, but will help you to perpetuate your hurts and your wounds. Or you can find people that will help you to heal.
That's so important, isn't it? To find the right tribe. They say find your tribe. And it's so important to be careful who you let in.
Yes, you have. And I preach that a lot. I preach that to my clients a lot. Now that you are in this journey and it's very painful, please be precious about these beautiful layers that you're finding about yourself. Be very precious. Look after yourself. And don't let, because those hooks, the little hooks that we carry inside us, they will always be there. They're not going to disappear.
What does that mean, hooks?
The little hooks is the thing I'm talking about, the hungry ghost.
Right. Yeah.
The want for somebody to come and hurt us so we can feel less than.
Yeah.
So they will always be there. So really, in many ways, the self-growth, self-awareness, it's a lifelong journey. It's a lifelong journey. I have found that myself so far.
That's so true. It is. Yeah. And, you know, it rears its ugly head in different places, doesn't it? I mean, for me, like in my experience, I think, wow, that started very young. And you think by a certain age, you should be over these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And it isn't. And I don't know if you found that, but what I find either both with myself or my client is that sometimes you come, you think you covered something, an aspect of your life, but then you come back to it again with a different value, with a different meaning, with a different weight to look at and to heal and to, oh, okay, I didn't look at it at this point also. All right. So it's ever going. And there's always a new lens that lenses that you can learn to look through, both for your life and but also for other people. Because the more you heal, the better you feel free and peaceful to deal and to communicate with the outside world. Really,
it's so important. I mean, that's why we have to start young, isn't it? Because you want to create adults who are able.
Yes,
you know, who are self-regulating, who are able to manage their emotions, who are able to manage life in a very positive way. And so we really ought to start quite young.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I think the key expression is self-regulation.
Self-regulation, okay.
And the self-regulation is, if I talk to a teenager, if I had a teenager child, or if I was working at school, I would 100% encourage them to feel all the feelings. Feel it. Just feel it. Feel anxious. Feel sad. Feel rejected. Feel abandoned. Feel. But you feel with support.
Right.
Because when you feel with support, you can learn to self-regulate. You can learn from early age to sit with it. Know what you're feeling and know that you're not going to die from it. And know that that feeling can, or that emotion can be an extra tool for your self-awareness. And that's why I do think, and I support in what you're saying, that the earlier we begin this, the self-awareness journey.
Yeah, self-awareness journey.
But also, the more we start supporting that, the better society we will create.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally believe in that, yes. And I see that, I mean, everybody that I look after now, they are all fully grown adults. But really, we're healing their past. We're not healing the today. I mean, of course, today, they're becoming healed, self-regulated, they're learning about themselves. But we always go to the past. We go to the 13-year-old version of themselves.
Where the core wound was created,
Right. The 5-year-old, the 7-year-old. So we keep going back. So if I have to talk, and I worked also just a little extra about my background. I work with children for for many years.
Oh, did you?
I was a child carer.
Oh, were you? Okay.
So I worked with parents, I worked with children, and I did a bunch of courses in psychological development of children, because I've been always very interested in how human works. So I can talk from that part of my life, watching them, being with them, but I can also talk from seeing them in adult body, but in front of me regressing to their past self.
That must be very, very powerful, because you're seeing the whole range, aren't you? You've seen the childhood, and now you're seeing adults being presented, and you can connect it, can't you?
Yes, yes, I can. Yes. And now more than ever, I mean, I still I make jokes with some friends that have young children, you know, 5 years old, 7 years old. And there is an expression called good enough mother or good enough carer.
OK.
And in the literature of the development of a child, which is to give enough support, not too much. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be a perfect parent. You just need to show that you are there for their mistakes. You are there for when they feel very low, but you are there for when they are learning also, and have that, give that support. And I love it. I love being able to go to all the full spectrum of the person, a person, a human development.
Mm.
Yes, it's really nice.
And when you think about it, in order for parents to be able to give to their children, to give them that space, to give them that nurturing, they must themselves be in the right place to do that.
Yes. Yes. It's passed on. It's passed on. It's a chain of self-caring and caring. And in terms of, and in the language trauma, we've got an expression called intergenerational trauma.
Mm, yes.
Which is passed on from one generation to the next generation, right? And it happened pretty much to me. I managed to break the cycle.
Yeah.
But I can see that being repeated in people that I know.
Right.
People that I've known, the parents, the grandparents, parents and children.
All suffering with the same.
All suffering, they're just passing on the hurt.
Habits, yeah.
So in terms of, we were talking earlier about relationship. So if you go on to be with somebody that makes you feel all those not so nice things about yourself, and you marry them and you have children with them, and the household becomes that chaos, so then what do you think your children will think or will feel or will experience?
Of course, they'll experience the same, won't they?
The same thing. So you pass on and on and on. So obviously for a parent to feel, and I understand, I worked with parents very closely. So I have a huge respect and love for parents, because it's a tiring, it's exhausting job. And for parents that are also professionals, oh my goodness, it never stops.
Yeah.
And then for you to harvest or to harness, to say more correctly, the energy, compassion, love for your child when you're exhausted.
Mm, it's impossible sometimes, isn't it? It's just you don't have it to give. Yeah.
Absolutely. And therefore, the expression of good enough, you don't have to be perfect. You can be good enough. But if there is enough nurturing, attention, boundaries, and love in your house, in your environment, for your children, but for yourself also as a person, then I think more than half of the battle is done.
Of course, because children learn from their parents, don't they? So if you're learning that your parent is giving themselves some self-love, then they will learn how to do that for themselves, won't they?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And children, they learn by observing. They observe and they absorb, right? And talking about my own past, of course, I heard a lot. I had a lot of abusive words towards me. But I also, most of my panicky and unsafe feelings came more from watching the environment.
Right.
Watching what was going on. The unpredictability of the environment, a scream, a shout, a physical altercation, strange faces. I was just very aware of all of that. And I know all children are. I know they all are.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, my parents used to argue a lot. You know, there's always financial arguments, always arguing about something or other. And I remember feeling like I couldn't really enjoy my food, or I couldn't really, you know, I felt very nervous about where these conversations were going, you know. And it's funny because I actually, you know, I even feel it now. So I'm 50 now. And if my parents start arguing, I mean, they're nowhere near as bad as they used to be. You know, they're in their 70s now. But I remember even now, if they start arguing, I become hysterical. Like I start feeling, and my sister doesn't feel the same. So isn't that funny? So two children in the same family can have a completely different feeling or experience their childhood very differently. Because my sister doesn't feel the same way about the arguments. Because I don't think they were, I think they were more settled when they had the second child. And I think maybe they might not have been quite as settled when they had me. So I feel very stressed if they get even just a little bit argumentative. I feel very stressed at this age. Stop it! You know, I don't know why, you know, but I feel it, but she does not feel it.
No, and also that's the hard job of the first child. So it's to get everything very
take it all.
And, but also there's the individuality of each one of us that we all develop different coping mechanisms, survival mechanisms. Some people disassociate. Some people get stressed. Some people develop autoimmune disease. Some people. And so on and so forth. But I get a lot of those questions from my clients. So why, Sandra, am I this way? And my sister should just go like, la, la, la.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing's happening. So nothing's happening. And I ask them, how do you know nothing's happening?
Mm.
You don't know. They might be disassociating deliberately. Right? And then even that in itself, it becomes a malfunction. If you learn to disassociate from every unpleasant, uncomfortable situation. And that plays also, you know, and that can play at work. So just give a scenario, you can just move on work every time it becomes a bit challenging.
True.
Or relationships.
Yeah.
You know, when it becomes a bit too much. Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
So there's so many ways of doing disconnecting.
Yeah.
And just like, okay, no, this is too much. I'm out of here.
It's a different coping mechanism, isn't it?
It's a different coping mechanism, yes. Whereas for you, it was probably just to really get really nervous.
For sure.
Really nervous about it. And what do you do with that energy? It's what we do with what. It's the self-awareness of, I don't want this to accumulate to the point of making me ill. What can I do with this? Right? It's pretty much like if we put, again, in trauma, response is the four Fs: fight, flight, freeze, and fawn.
I haven't heard those. I've heard of fight and flight, but I haven't heard of the other two.
Yeah, so the fawn, which it has been added lately, is about pleasing.
Oh, so F-A-W-N, fawn, not...
Yeah.
I've not heard that before. That's interesting.
Yeah. So if we talk about domestic violence...
Yeah.
Against both sexes. And when the person that is the one that the violence is inflicted... Mm-hmm. And they just become submissive, and they, you know, they just cave in into the violence. That is, okay, I will do anything. I will, you know, yes, you're right. Yes, I behave badly. I deserve this.
Right. Just accepting it and absorbing it, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's, of course, that's another coping mechanism, just to get through it.
That's just,
right? Just to get through it.
Yes, just to get through it. Yeah. Yeah. It's finding, it's in I find that in some ways I have observed in my clients that you find the fault in yourself so you can stay where you are. You don't do anything about it.
And why would someone want to stay as they are if they're in a difficult situation?
In so many ways, they're stuck inside here. I think that's the first reason. Mm. I think the second reason is lack of support, environmental support.
Yeah.
But mostly, what I hear mostly is that because they haven't experienced anything different, they don't think there is anything different out there. And that's the major, the majority of the reasons why people stay in destructive, toxic environments, relationship, work environment.
Yeah.
Because they don't
believe the grass is greener. They don't believe the grass is greener.
Right. Yeah. Or they believe the grass is greener, but I don't deserve it.
Not enough.
Something
not
like enough. You said about yourself. Yeah. I don't deserve it. Oh my goodness. I wish I had that relationship for me, but of course I could never have it.
No, I was the same. I was just like, oh, there's nothing else out there. I mean, this is the best that I deserve. And I probably won't, you know, that is for other people. You know, I always imagined in my head, oh, you've got to be 6 foot blonde haired, blue eyed to get the perfect man. Because if you don't look like Elle Macpherson or someone else, then you're not going to get that perfect person. You are just going to get what you deserve, you know.
Yes.
All based on looks and intelligence and who you are, you know.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I wrote an article about this also, how your body image informs your self-esteem. And culturally speaking, you just said what you thought it would be a beautiful image. And in Brazil, back in Brazil, I was so heavily bullied. And also, I wasn't famous with boys at all. And I had this idea that only if I was shorter, because I'm a very tall lady and I have a particular body shape, which it is the standards really preached around, I would be beautiful.
Mm.
So yeah. I learned about how to find myself beautiful and to treat myself beautifully much later on in life, much, much later. And I had to, very often, I have to talk to that part of myself because sometimes she comes to the surface and she gives me these vibes of insecurity, of not good enough, of not beautiful enough, and then I need to have a chat with her.
Yeah, of course. It can raise its head at any time, can't it?
Yeah. Yes. At any moment.
At any moment.
It's one of those things that we're talking about. The journey is never finished. It always comes back with a different quality. No. Always.
For me, it's if I walk into a conference room, the panic comes straight away. Not good enough, haven't got enough to say, not successful enough, you know. It's just, you know, like any situation, it can come up, can't it? It can pop up anywhere.
And all the self-critical and self-doubt. So where do their voices first started?
Yeah.
Who do they represent? Where did you hear that?
Whose voices are they? Yeah.
Right. But also most of the time, you can't even pinpoint who said that at what point. It's just a lived experience that you learned that about yourself because people treated you in a particular way. So all of that is to uncover and to talk to and to create a dialogue. Because the healing really is about the dialogue between all these parts of us that they want attention, they want a cuddle, they want love, they want to say, You are enough. You're good enough. You're wonderful. And whatever you've got to contribute, it's whatever you've got to contribute. It's precious. We welcome it.
That's so, that's what everyone needs to hear, don't they? That's what everyone needs to hear.
Yeah. And that is the, you know, the going back to childhood and going back to teenage years. That's, you don't have to be like anybody else.
Mm.
You just have to be cherished for who you are, for what you are, for your capabilities or for your growing edges. But just be appreciated, because we're all very unique. I know now we have the social media that portrays perfect life, perfect hair, perfect body. And in some ways it becomes this group that if you don't fit in, then, you know, you're not good enough. You go improve yourself until you do that. And that is encouraging a lot of body dysmorphia, eating disorder,
right,
and the lack of self-acceptance that we need growing up at schools, at home, with friends, with families. It's not too much to ask, is it?
No.
It's just self-acceptance.
So two things here. So if you're going to give teenagers just a little bit of advice, what would you tell them?
As I was talking to my teenage self, I would say, try to find a group of people that bring up the best of you. Try to connect with people that find all the beautiful things that you're not able to see about you, but they can find it for you and with you. And self-acceptance. You are unique. That body that you have today, your soul chose that body to occupy during this journey here that can be very short, called life. Treasure it, nurture it, be with it. I would definitely, that was something I would advocate, and I would tell myself, and I tell myself, my teenage self, almost daily.
That's so beautiful. And so then how about one for the parents? So if you were going to tell a parent something, what advice would you give parents so that they in a better space to look after their children?
I have a lot of compassion and love for parents. I love a lot. I have walked next to them, and I have watched that journey. And I would say to them, rest, giving yourself your own time, rest time. It's not being selfish. It's looking after yourself so you can give on. You can give care. So look after yourself, rest as much as you can, whenever you can. Ask for help. You don't have to be the warrior and the god, or you don't have to have to appear to have superpower. You are human. And you also get tired. You also get fed up, emotionally exhausted. So I would say these two things. Rest and ask for help.
It's powerful, isn't it? Asking for help is not always easy.
No.
Parents always feel like they have to do everything themselves without asking. And I think sometimes that's just impossible.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in the past, back in the Stone Age, you used to need a village to raise a child. And some people are raising on their own. Right, so there have to be all the important figures of a town in one person. It's unfair. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And what's next for you, Sandra? What do you hope? What are your hopes and dreams?
My hopes and dreams, what's next for me? Well, I want to carry on with what I'm doing, looking after people and helping people. And I want to learn more as much as I can so I can pass on.
Mm-hmm.
I want to heal myself more. And I want to I think professionally speaking, I want to embrace the web world, the internet world, and use my platforms to give free advice, free short therapies, to encourage people to get to know themselves, to be more curious about themselves, mm-hmm. and to be kind to one another. One hello, one how are you, one how can I help you can change a day, a week, a month, can make a whole difference. So that these are my hopes for my future.
Kindness is everything, isn't it?
Kindness is everything, yes, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been such a
pleasure.
Gosh, I've learned so much from you. Thank you so much, Sandra, for giving us all this time. Your time is so precious.
Well, thank you, Sonia. I thank you very much for inviting me. You've got such a kind energy about you, your smile, your face. Since the first time we talked, I really felt drawn to your energy. And thank you for doing this. This is a community work. This is a social work that you're doing through your platform. It's so, so important. It's a little bit of encouragement and getting people to be more curious about themselves and to be the best version of themselves that they can be. Thank you.
It's been wonderful. Thank you. Wow. Well, that's it for this series of Unseen Legacies of Childhood. Thank you so much to Sandra for her humanity and wisdom and for sharing her own story of trauma with us. Her warmth and her loving guidance will be of such value to many of you, I'm sure. It certainly was huge, huge for me. Trauma in childhood, no matter how big or small, can have such a detrimental impact on our mental and physical health as adults. Struggling with mental health makes it that much harder to have the confidence and the strength to go after your dreams, to go for that job, to feel worthy of that friendship or that romance. I hope that through listening to this podcast, we can all learn to prioritize our own health and that of the next generation. It can only lead to a positive society for all. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.